Raymond smiled back at him, but not grimly. And he looked amazingly handsome and vitally attractive, Josie thought from far across the room as she entered carrying a tray. He had such even white teeth against such a long tanned face, and he offered them the yellow-green eyes of a lion.
"If you weren't sure of that, sir," Raymond said, "you couldn't be sure of anything, because that is the absolute truth."
They both laughed, unexpectedly and heartily, and were friends of a sort. Josie came up to them with the cups and the coffee and a bottle of rye whiskey, and Raymond began to feel the beginnings of what was to be a constant summer-long nausea as he tried to equate the daughter of Senator Jordan with the ancient, carbonized prejudice of his mother. That summer was the only happy time, excepting one, the only fully joyous, concentrically transforming time in Raymond's life. Two pure and cooling fountains were all Raymond ever found in all that aridness of time allotted to him, two brief episodes in his entire life in which he awoke each morning looking forward in joy to more joy, and found it. Only twice was there a time when he did not maintain the full and automatic 360-degree horizon of raw sensibilities, over which swept the three searing beams of suspicion, fear, and resentment, flashing from the loneliness of the tall lighthouse of his soul. Josie showed him how she felt. She told him how she felt. She presented him with the pomp of new love, 1,000 small and radiant gifts each day. She behaved as though she had been waiting an eternity for him to catch up with her in the time continuum. And now that he had arrived with his body to occupy a predestined place in space beside her, she knew she must wait still longer, while he tried desperately to mature all at once out of infancy until he could understand that she only wanted to give to him, asking nothing but his awareness in return. She behaved as though she loved him, a condition that could swing in suspension to fix his concentration, but which, when he could understand, would need to blend with his love, matching it exactly. He walked beside her. Once or twice he touched her, but he did not know how to touch her or where to touch her. However, she saw right on the surface of him how greatly he was trying to learn, how he was struggling to lose the past so he could tell her of the glories she made him feel and of how enormously he needed her. Every morning he waited outside her house, staring as though he could see through the walls, until she came running out to him. They spent all of every day together. They separated late in the late darkness. They did not speak much, but each day she moved him closer to breaking through his barriers and willed him with her love to say more each day, and she was filled with the ambition to make him safe with her love. The summer was the second best time in his merely twice-blessed living span. The first time was not the equal of the second time because of his fear, the conviction that it would be taken from him the instant he voiced his need for it. Whatever they did together, he held himself rigid, awaiting the scream of his mother's rage. And it cost him 30 pounds of his flesh because he could not keep food down as he battled to hold the thoughts of his mother and Josie apart. His mother found out about Josie in time, and who Josie's father was, of course. And it was all over. Johnny said he didn't want to be around when she told Raymond what had to be. He went back to the Capitol, where he had a lot of work to do anyway. Raymond got home late that night. His mother was waiting for him. She was wearing a fantastically beautiful Chinese housecoat. It was orange-red. It had a deep black Elizabethan collar that stood up straight behind and around her shining blonde head, in the mode of wicked witches. But it made her look very lovely and very kind, and she smelled very beautiful and enlightened. As Raymond dragged his dread behind him into the room, sickened to find her awake so late. There she sits like a mail-order goddess, serene as the star on a Christmas tree, as calm as a jury, preening the teeth of her power with the floss of my joy, soiling it, shredding it, and just about ready to throw it away. And she is getting to look more and more like those two-dimensional women who pose for nail polish advertisements, and I have wanted to kill her for all of these years, and now it is too late. "What the hell do you want, Mother?" "What the hell kind of a greeting is that at 3:30 in the morning? It's 3:15. What do you want?" "What's the matter with you?" "I'm shocked to be in a room alone with you after all these years, I guess." "All right, Raymond.
so I'm a busy woman. Do you think I work and work and ruin my health for myself? I do it for you. I'm making a place for you.
Please don't do it for me, Mother. Do it for Johnny. Worse, I couldn't wish him.
What you're doing to Johnny is the worst you could wish him.
What is it? I'll double it.
I speak of that little communist tart.
Shut up, Mother. Shut up with that!
His voice rose to a squeak. Do you know what Jordan is? Are you about to crucify Johnny?
I can't answer you. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to bed.
Sit down.
He stopped where he was. He was near a chair, and he sat down.
Raymond, they live in New York. How would you see her?
I thought of getting a job in New York.
You have to do your army service.
Next spring.
Well?
I might be dead next spring.
Oh, Raymond, for Christ's sake!
No one has given me a written, printed, bonded guarantee that I will live another week. This girl is now. What the hell do I care about her father's politics any more than I care about your politics? Josie is all I care about.
Raymond, if we were at war now...
Oh, Mother, for Christ's sake!
And you were suddenly to become infatuated with the daughter of a Russian agent, wouldn't you expect me to come to you and object, to beg you to stop the entire thing before it was too late? Well, we are at war. It's a cold war, but it will get worse and worse until every man and woman and child in this country will have to stand up and be counted to say whether or not he or she is on the side of right and freedom or on the side of the Thomas Jordans of this country. I will go with you to Washington tomorrow, if you like, and I will show you documented proof that this man stands for evil and that he will do anything to win that evil.
That was the gist of it. Raymond's mother began her filibuster at approximately 3 o'clock in the morning, and she kept at him, walking beside him wherever he went in the house, standing next to him, talking shrilly of the American dream and its meaning in the present, pulling stops out bearing the invisible labels left over from 4th of July speeches and old Hearst editorials, such as The Red Menace, Liberty, Freedom, and America as we know it, Thought Police in the American Way, until 10 minutes to 11 o'clock the following morning, when Raymond, who had lost so much weight that summer and who had been running a subnormal fever for 3 weeks, collapsed. She had talked through each weakening manifestation of defiance he had made, through his shouts and screams, through his tears and pleadings and whimpering and sobs. And the sure power of her limitless strength slowly and surely overcame his double weakness, both the physical and the psychological, until he was convinced that he would be well rid of Josie if he could trade her for some silence and some sleep. She made him take 4 sleeping pills, tucked him into his trundle bed, and he slept until the following afternoon at 5:45, but was even then too weak to get up. His mother, having put her little boy to beddy by, took a hot shower, followed by a cold shower, ran a comforting amount of morphine into the large vein in her left forearm, which was always covered with those smart long sleeves, and sat down at the typewriter to compose a little note from Raymond to Josie. She rewrote it 3 times, to be sure, but when it was done right, and she signed his name and sealed the envelope. She got dressed, popped into the pickup truck, and drove directly to the Jordan camp. Josie had gone to the post office on an errand for her father, but the senator was there. Raymond's mother said it would be necessary for them to have a talk, so he invited her inside the house. The Jordans packed and left the lake by 6 o'clock that evening. Josie, who had fallen as deeply in love with Raymond as he with her, and more than that because she was healthy and normal, never really understood quite why it was all over. Her father told her that Raymond had enlisted in the army that morning, had telephoned only to say that he could not see Josie again, and goodbye. Her father, having read the terrible letter, had shuddered with nausea and burned it. Raymond's mother had explained to him that despite their own personal differences, she had come to say to him that his daughter was far too fine a girl to be hurt or twisted by her son, that Raymond was a homosexual, and in other ways degenerate, and that he would be far, far better forgotten by this sweet, fine child.